Chancellor, let's talk about the future of higher education. I think that, first of all, looking at the most bullish present signs, it's interesting because I find that in business, and I run a business, that when things are going well, it is difficult to get the attention of the change agents it's difficult to be a change agent and difficult to get the attention of folks that things are changing all around them in ways that that would be maybe more difficult if that would be easier if things were not going so well. For example, things at UNC are going pretty good right now. I noticed that for the first time ever, you have appeared in the top 10 among research universities in the level of funding devoted to research and development. I'm curious, how do you do that?
Well, I'm very proud of that, and it's something that a lot of people worked on over a lot of years. But the building program that was started with the bond issue and then the wonderful way that it was executed by James Meeser and the Board of Trustees and our facilities planning folks. That has made a huge impact.
Takes a lot of your time.
It didn't take a lot of my time, the building program, because most of that was over by the time I came on. But that was all done.
The federal funding, the grant programs, the campaigning
Jim,
kind of activity.
What I'm saying is that the buildings that we built before I got here were an incredibly important part of how it is that we were able to grow the federal research funding. So I think James Meeser and the Board of Trustees that served during that time get credit for that. And then what we did to kind of take it to the next level is something that, you know, not everybody was comfortable with, but I believe that I talked about research a lot more than my predecessors have. Politically, it doesn't get you that far to talk about research. The politicians and the legislators don't really know that much about graduate education, and most people, when they think about Carolina, think about undergraduate education and intercollegiate athletics. But the research part of the university, which is $800 million of our budget, is the largest source of funding, and it's the thing that drives the academic reputation of the university the most. And so I spent a lot more time talking about research than a lot of other chancellors do. And I think that paid off because people felt that faculty felt that they were at a place where that was valued. So I think that's my contribution to that. But it wouldn't have happened if we hadn't gotten the construction program where it was. And if we could do more with the social sciences, we could drive that number up even higher.
This is certainly good news. And also, when you look at you mentioned this when we first began, that undergraduate applications went up 43% while you were here in the chance. First of all, how's that happen?
Well, the main thing is just the experience that college students have if they come to Carolina is something that is valued. And again, this goes back to the conversation we were having earlier. Intercollegiate athletics is certainly a driver of that. And that's really the most important metric for a university. If students still want to come to your place to go to college, then you can get through most other problems because if you're a private university, you'll get tuition from those students. And if you're a public university, you'll get tuition plus state appropriations that it's given primarily with the idea of educating those young people. So the undergraduate demand is an incredibly important metric for colleges and universities. And the town of Chapel Hill and the sports programs and the great undergraduate teachers and the undergraduate research and study abroad and the honors program – all of that drives that demand, and that's incredibly important.
And the student body, I suppose, gets smarter. When you have more students to choose from, you get smarter ones.
That's correct. Yeah, we're well north of 1,300 on our average SAT score and a huge number of students from the top 10 in their class. And I believe we tend to average between 7 and 8 AP classes for all of our admitted undergraduates. Or enrolled undergraduates. Admitted must be somewhat higher than that.
So let's talk about long-term threats. And this problem this issue will go with you to St. Louis. And it's the changing technological world that we live in. It was interesting in the sports panel the other day. I think it was Bubba Cunningham who talked about the birth of ESPN back in 1979. I mean, it was sort of a one camera. It was about as low budget in operation. I don't think we had any idea that it would become the dominant sports media organization in the country, maybe the world. And now I think about that when I think about online education and Coursera and edX. It's exploded. The Coursera has exploded out of nowhere to be an online program that was started by a couple of Stanford professors. Think about Google. And now I think they have Stanford, Cal Berkeley, Princeton, Penn, and now UNC is participating in Coursera.
We are, yes.
And what are you doing with Coursera?
Well, we're going to put a few classes up on Coursera and see who takes them and kind of get involved in this whole movement. I think it's really important for colleges and universities to be engaged in this. In addition to being in Coursera, we also have a deep partnership with a company called 2U, which does a more individualized kind of online education, and we do that with an online MBA degree, and we've launched something called the Semester Online, where students will be able to take undergraduate courses through this 2U project. And my attitude about it, and this is true here and this will be true when I go to St. Louis, is that these things are here to stay, and we need to be part of the conversation and part of the effort that's going into developing these things. But I don't think the extreme views on either side of this are correct. I don't think that this is going to disrupt residential college education overnight. And I also don't think that it's something we can ignore. I think it's something that we need to be in the game on, and I believe Carolina is, and I hope to make sure Washington University is. They are, because they're part of the 2U semester online, and they have an online degree with 2U as well. So this is a part of the future of higher education. And, you know, we need to be careful and deliberate and do a great job at this and recognize the limitations and assets of it.
There's a possibility that there are some people in our audience who may not know what Coursera is. So maybe we should explain that it's a free, it's college courses being taught by major universities, free online. Would that be a reasonable characterization?
That's correct. And to large numbers of people. And because it's free, there's generally no credit involved. And so huge numbers of people sign up for these classes, but a relatively small percentage actually completes them. And there's the frontier in all this is trying to assess the work that the students do and to figure out whether it qualifies for college credit. And these are very difficult logistical and technical and pedagogical challenges that we're all working through.
I think the question is, to what extent do we think this is a threat? Because just January of this year, it seems to me every time you pick up the Chronicle of Higher Education or you look at the news media, I'm not sure the public at large is paying a lot of attention to this, but the American Council of Education approved five courses for college credit this year, and there's now a proctoring. There's a new company. I think it's called, is it Proctor U? There are others that will proctor final exams and have these courses count toward college credit. Seems to be that this is beginning to gain traction. The question would be not whether it is an immediate threat, but over the course of the next 20 to 30 years, which is not an unreasonable planning frame for universities, do you not see it as a threat to brick and mortar?
I don't see it as a threat. I don't think that the students who have been admitted to Carolina for the fall are going to go downstairs and say to their parents, you know what, I've decided instead of going to Chapel Hill, I'm just going to stay here and go to school online. So I think there's always going to be a group of students that want to come to residential college. And that gets back to what I was saying earlier about the number of undergraduate applications being such an important metric for us. But I think what this movement is going to do is going to allow people who haven't accessed higher education before to be able to do it, either because they can't afford to or because they're in parts of the world or the country where it's not practical for them to do that. I think it will give us a way to provide certain kinds of specialized education to students who need it. And I think it's a great way to get, and this gets back to what we were talking about earlier about the awareness of the university. It gives the universities a great way to get their name and quality and character out there to large numbers of people in a new way. And that is something that universities really, really need. So, you know, you can think of it as a, and you can see that this in the way people react. I mean, if the the schools that got into Coursera early were pointed to by other schools who hadn't done it yet as saying, oh, look, well, Stanford is in this or Duke is in this. Why aren't we in it? And because people want their university's name to be out there. And if this is a way to get the name out there, that's something that that is good for universities to show their great classes and their great professors.
Easily, one of the most important parts of the college experience is what you learn outside the classroom, your peer groups, your study groups, the socialization, and then, of course, the brand that you get as a result of having been certified by the university in some way or another is having completed a certain amount of study. Can you do that? Is that ultimately what will support, you think, residential learning?
Well, I think there are many different things that support residential learning, and it's the experience of being on a college campus and being away from home and all the things that we think of that college does, in addition to the academic part. And then I think that, you know, what we're learning from a lot of these online classes is that some of the challenges we have in the classroom are even greater online. The students who from difficult backgrounds who need extra help in college do even less well online. And so there are all kinds of things about educational access that this is going to raise, and it's going to help us understand a lot about how people can succeed in school.
One of the things we find in radio stations that have become automated is that one of the things that happen, it doesn't happen in Chapel Hill, happily, because we create all of our own news with our own folks. But if you look at major market radio stations, what you have is what we might call is the second tier local announcer has found himself generally less valuable as the radio stations are able to import digitally a better talent. So if you're a professor and you are a star, it would seem to me that this would give you the opportunity to become a bigger star because you would be able to reach a much wider audience than you can in your classroom. But if you're not a star, then the market value of your services might go down. Can you envision that?
Well, that's more or less what I was just saying, which is that this is a way for the university to get its name out there and its great popular professors showcased even more. Whether what that's going to mean internally, I mean, it's a common thing about academic politics that there are people who don't feel that everyone is treated evenly, but that's true in organizations generally. And so, yes, there are going to be some star professors who are stars in MOOCs more so than some of their colleagues. But we have faculty who are on TV more and who are commenting in the news more and who get more research grants. I mean, this is a diverse place. So we're going to have some faculty members who are good at teaching in the classroom and not good at teaching online and vice versa.
But it's going to change.
Yes. Oh, yeah. And that's what I said when we first started talking about this.
Well, Chancellor, it's going to be very interesting to watch this roll out. And, of course, you're still young enough that the chances are that you may experience all of this during what is likely to continue to be a very active career. It ought to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk about more complicated issues, issues having to do with sexual tension, sexual conflicts on the campus. And although UNC is not alone, it's the university that we think about. We'll talk about that when we continue.